episode 6 or 7. I need to get that together before I get on there. Welcome to the Instant Offense Podcast, brought to you by James Hollis of B-Ball Breakdown, and I am James Hollis. Joining us today, we got Mr. Sean Sullivan, BrightSideOfTheSun.com representer. Sean, what's up, man?
Doing well, James. Thanks for having me on.
Nah, man, I appreciate you being so patient. This has been in the works for a couple weeks now, and hey, Sean, you want to come on the podcast? Sure, when? I tell him a day, and then I have to move it, and then another day move it. So I'm pretty sure Sean thought I was jerking him around. So I appreciate him being so patient and joining me today.
No problem.
Someone told me don't talk about weather anymore on the air, but I got to ask you, what was the temperature? What was your high today in Phoenix?
You know, it wasn't too bad today. It was a little bit overcast. We've been having a little bit of wind storms and stormy weather, so it's actually... You know, it's a little bit more humid than normal, but at least the sun's not baking you from the sky.
So what did you guys hit? 110, 120?
No, I don't even think it was that much. Probably, you know, maybe like 103, somewhere in that area.
This is what we call compelling radio right here. Hey, man, I'm really high on the Suns this year already. I've been saying it. And I'm becoming more and more intrigued as the off season goes on. Talk to me a little bit. So you guys had some surprising success at the end of the 2014 season, and then coming into last season, the expectations. Talk to me a little bit how you started off the season last year. What was the attitude around?
Yeah, well, exactly what you said. The 2013-14 season was a big surprise to everybody. I mean, that was the season that everybody basically thought the Suns were going into full rebuild mode. They were going to start over with young talent. You know, they had hired a brand new front office, new coach. They were just going to, you know, start over and turn things around. And everyone was, you know, completely bought into this process that they expected to take, you know, anywhere from 2, 3, even 5 years. To really get back and start competing. But that 2013-14 season, everything clicked. Everything worked. The guys they brought in played well together. The Suns were one of the, you know, the Cinderella storylines of the season. They just, you know, it was, they caught magic in a bottle and they just ran with it through the entire season and shocked everybody, barely missing the playoff by one game. So,
and everybody,
you know,
real quick, if my listeners don't remember, seriously, like, I think ESPN and Sports Illustrated, all the projection sites projected Phoenix to have one of the worst seasons ever. Seriously, they were like, this team is so bad, they trade everybody away, they're going to, and I mean, like Sean says, it was all part of the plan. You know, they were tanking, they were going to bottom out, get some draft picks, whatever. So, literally, I remember, you know, writers were pontificating about, will this be one of the worst seasons in the NBA has ever seen? So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's exactly right. That we were all on board expecting the Suns to, you know, just completely bottom out, blow it up, and starting over with a younger squad. And just, you know, it was all about potential and building up the young guys and helping develop everybody. No one expected to win that season. And all of a sudden, they started winning. And, you know, expectations, they started to change. And that really impacted expectations going into the 2014-15 season.
So let's move forward a little bit. It was weird because at the end of last season, you played so well. And then January and February rolled around. I want you to take me there. Take me to what your mindset and what the attitude of the team was around that time. Because it was a stark contrast to the way the season started off. And it was really sad because, well, not even sad. I'm not going to use the word sad. It was just very odd because of the way you ended the season before. So talk to me about that.
Well, you know, there was something different even at the start of last season. It just, things were not quite the same. The only major difference between that season and the season prior was, you know, losing Channing Frye. And everyone knew that he would have a bit of an impact because he does such a great job of spacing the floor, allowing the guards to operate. But nobody thought it was going to be that much of a difference. And I'm still not convinced that he really was the sole purpose. I think there was a lot of personality conflicts and players that weren't sure what their role was. And so things just weren't gelling. And I think that caused them to struggle. And it really boiled over right before the trade deadline.
Oh, yeah, man. I just remember you guys said the feel good story the year before. Eric Bledsoe, one of my favorite players. Dragic really endeared himself to me. And then to hear him come out and, you know, basically say, I don't trust this team, trade me. It's pretty shocking. And moves were made. They moved him out. They got him to Miami, and you guys brought in Brandon Knight. How do you feel the end of the season went? And then talk to me a little bit. Well, let's talk about that first. Yeah, how did you feel when they moved Dragic and they brought in Knight? What was the attitude then? What were you feeling then?
Well, to tell you the truth, at the time when Dragic dropped that bombshell on everyone, no one expected that to happen. And I think it was, you know, less than 2 weeks before the All-Star break and the trade deadline when that all went down. So when that happened, the panic, you know, swept over everybody as far as you have a player who's a great asset who now wants to be traded to one of three teams, basically put his demands out there. They knew, at that point, Phoenix lost all leverage. So the fact that Ryan McDonough, the Suns GM, was able to get what he did for Dragic and, you know, some future first-round picks and then turn around and also trade for Brandon Knight, I thought he navigated that situation very well, and I was very happy with the return, getting a player like Brandon Knight, to compensate for losing Dragic.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating team, and I think it really speaks to how much chemistry and personality matter on teams. I think sometimes we get wrapped up in stats, and you know the new thing now, of course, is the deep analytics and the way numbers shape a team, and they matter. They obviously matter, but it's a fascinating example of almost like a sociological experiment, because on paper Phoenix did a great job, even though the off season before last year, trying to bolster that, you know, great effort you had. And sometimes it's not about on paper. And I don't know if you remember, Pat Riley discussed this in his one of his books after the, about repeating championships, and he called it the disease of more. And he said that after some success, everybody kind of wants more minutes, more money, more fame. And even though Phoenix did it on a smaller scale, you know, everyone said that they were going to lose big and be terrible, and then you guys almost made the playoffs in 2014. The personality kind of came into play, and you know, now we have the Markieff drama. Talk to me a little about that, because I didn't want to believe it. I don't keep up too much with Phoenix personalities and the local news. I like the Suns, so I kept hearing this guy Gambo, and he was saying his name about Markieff wanting to leave, and you know, I understand he was upset about his brother, but I didn't really have to dwell until I hear from an official source. I'm not buying it. Then you know, I saw that a certain Sean Sullivan wrote about it. So talk to me a little bit about the dynamic with the Morris brothers, the Mori, as they're called. And because me, from the outside looking in, I saw talented twins combined. They made one very good player, and, you know, they gave teams versatility. A little hot-headed. I saw the text. I saw, you know, Marcus getting – that Hornacek thing was really ugly. So as what I would consider an insider from you, I want you to give me your perspective a little bit. Starting back with the Hornacek blow up, and then what you saw moving forward, and now where we are now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really is a long story. So let's buckle up, and I'll try to take you for the ride that we all went on last season. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. That's when it kind of started around that time where you saw a lot of technicals. Markieff was jawing at the refs, even on times when the ref would call plays in his favor. And it was really starting to annoy Coach Hornacek at the time, who implemented a policy about benching players whenever they would get a technical. And, you know, so there were so many different things going on. And, of course, you know, the Marcus blow up thing with on the sidelines where he was barking at Hornacek over something. I guess one of the players hit him in the face inadvertently, and Marcus took exception to it. And, you know, when Jeff was trying to calm him down, Marcus went off on his coach. So that's just one of those things you can't do. So throughout the entire season, there was just things like that. Not a giant, you know, issue, but just little annoyances and the technicals. And then all of a sudden, you know, they had that really poor performance against the Spurs. That was the game that everybody, you know, would remember the big situation with Markieff, where after the game, you know, the Suns had the worst first half in history. And after the game, Markieff takes to the reporters and goes on record. Now, a lot of times reporters will not report things like this that are said between players if they're not actually being interviewed. Markieff went up to the microphones and actually said, you know, that he tried to kind of blame it on the fans, saying that, you know, he doesn't feel that the fans are supporting, that they need more support from the fans. And now, this was right after the Suns put forth their worst effort ever. And
hey, Sean, let me interject real quick, just for all the listeners. I think if I'm not incorrect, this was the February 28th game, right? And they played in Phoenix, but Phoenix put up 24 points in the first half. they trailed 51-24 at the half, and they ended up losing 101-74. They saved themselves by scoring 33 in the fourth. Because before that, they scored 13, 11, and 17. So that was really, 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 I mean, that's
embarrassing.
I want to throw up.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I want to throw up right now. Markieff had 10 points and two rebounds. Marcus had, off the bench, he was the best player. He had 19 and 7 off the bench for Marcus. Other than that, nobody really came to play. It was ugly. So, yeah, right. So he took the mic, and I remember that, the infamous, you know, What did he say about the fans again?
Well, he tried to turn around on the fans. You know, the reason they had a lack of energy was the fans aren't cheering enough for them. They don't feel that they have the support of the home crowd. And, you know, I think that was a little bit of mistimed aggression, if nothing else, because there were some games just prior to that where the Suns were in some really close battles that went to the very last second. And they lost some very close games. And Markieff actually had a point. There were some games where the Suns fans were completely quiet at the very end of the game when you would expect everybody to be out of their seat and cheering. Now, to say it after a game like that, maybe, you know, he would have had a point. But to have all of that build up and then unload on the fans after they had one of their worst effort ever, you know, it was not a good time to say anything like that. And so, of course, he got backlash from the media, backlash from the fans. And that's really when the big downward spiral, I think, started for the Morris twins. So after that, of course, the rest of the season played out. Then we hear about an assault charge. So Markieff and Marcus are involved in some alleged assault at a rec center in Phoenix. Allegedly that they beat some guy up pretty good, and police were called. The guy was sent to the hospital. This went on, you know, it's still being adjudicated in the courts. We don't know what's going to happen with that, but this was just another, you know, another strike against them, another mark on their image, and another reason for the Suns to really want to explore some options about possibly getting rid of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so tough, man, because, I mean, that story about how they got paid together was such a feel-good kind of story, and it really, you know, it kind of played into what I thought about the Suns. I thought everybody was kind of getting along, and, you know, from the outside looking in, at the way they ended that season, you know, just so well, it seemed like, oh, man, that these guys are going to go places soon, and for everything to unfold the way it has, you know, I understand. Look, I understand Marcus and Markieff are close, and they're both upset that Marcus got traded, but, I mean, it is a business, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You get a chance to get LaMarcus Aldridge in town. I mean, you do what you got to do. And so,
And I think that's one of the things that people are missing about that, what you just said. You have a chance to get LaMarcus Aldridge. So they did trade Marcus to try to clear up some cap room. Now, I don't believe for a second the Suns front office would have ever traded Marcus if the Twins did not have such a tumultuous season. They would have treated them differently if they thought that they deserve to be treated more professionally and that they had you know, just handled themselves better. I don't think the Suns would have ever done this if not for all of the turmoil caused by the Twins last year. So, you know, there's some of that to be taken into consideration as well, because a lot of people are saying, look, the Suns signed the Twins kind of under a wink-wink agreement that they wanted to stay together forever. Now, there is nothing written in the contracts that they have to honor that. And I think the Suns would have honored that if the Twins wouldn't have had just such a bad season all around.
So, tell me a little bit about this Gambo character, and I guess it sounds from what I'm reading, you know, through the lines on Twitter, and people have mentioned him, that he almost has like a vendetta against the Morai, but at the same time, he's not making things up. You know, I guess the report came out almost a week and a half, 2 weeks ago about him saying it. And I was like, until I hear from a credible source, I'm not buying it. And people from, you know, I guess the Phoenix area, and people that some people that follow both of us were telling me, oh no, that Gambo guy, he's credible. And I said, I never trust the guy named Gambo. And so,
yeah. Well, besides that, he's absolutely credible. He is the Phoenix version of Adrian Wojnarowski. So, if he says something, he's very well connected to the inside of the Suns organization. He's at the games. He has no problems, you know, coming up and talking to the players the night after he takes them to task for a really horrible game on the radio. So he's very well connected. He knows what he's talking about. Yeah, he might have a little bit of a vendetta, you know, or at least seem that way because of things that have happened with the Twins and the way that he does kind of stick up for the fans in a way. And I guess he's the one guy that'll do that in the media. So, but absolutely, when he's reporting something, I think everyone should listen because he really does know what he's talking about.
Huh. So, I guess what's funny to me, not even funny to me, it's just odd to me that I guess players are more self-aware, because now I understand Marquise saying he wants to go, and you know I don't want to be there, but it's amazing 2015 players don't realize that when they do that, they make it harder for them to move, right? Because it's all the other teams now know that Phoenix has no leverage, so they're going to try to lowball them. They're going to try to give them three quarters for the dollar, and Phoenix doesn't have to take that. Phoenix can just keep him there, and I guess send him home. He won't play at all. So I wish players would, or maybe I'm wrong. Tell me if you think is my logic on that wrong about why Marcus probably should have just kept his mouth shut and went to the front office and did what he did.
Yeah, you have a point. You know, with the situation, the way it's being handled right now, Marquise going out and demanding that he is not going to play in Phoenix is once again forcing their hand and taking leverage away from the Suns. So it is going to make the situation more difficult, because one thing you know about Ryan McDonough, he is not going to give away players for free, especially players that have value. Marquise, for all of his faults off the court, is very, very good on the court. He's a very solid power forward, especially when he's not supposed to be the premier player of the team, even though apparently he thought he was. But you know, when you have somebody like Eric Bledsoe, you don't need to have a guy, you know, to take over from the power forward spot. But he's very consistent. He's very solid. He's not a great rebounder, but he's consistently good in most of the things that he does. So Ryan McDonough does not want to give him away for free, especially when he's on a great contract. You know, he's on a 4-year contract for $32 million, $8 million a year. He's on an absolutely tremendous contract, but it's going to make it more difficult to get rid of him now that teams know that the Suns have to do that.
Yeah, I get it. He's upset, but yeah, it's just like a peek into the window of the volatility of those Twins, man. Have you thought about it? Give me a couple. What trade? You're the GM for the day. You take over. Give me a couple trades that you would like to make. Realistic kind of trade.
Well, you know, I tried to come up with a couple. We actually had a roundtable on Bright Side of the Sun when we tried to come up with some realistic trades for Marquise, and some of the other writers, I'm sure, invested way more time than I was willing to do looking at the ESPN trade machine and really looking at who they could get. There's some interesting, you know, trade scenarios that have come up. I think some of the people have said, you know, looking at, for instance, maybe looking at a place like Philadelphia, right? That's where Marquise is from. He's from Philly. They love Philly. One thing we know about Philly is they have a bunch of young bigs. They don't really have a veteran big. Now, I don't know if that's the type of veteran big that they would like. I will say right now, John,
it is not. That is not the veteran they would like. But, okay. Continue.
This is why this is so hard, right? Because, you know, they seem like they would be a great fit because they need somebody. They need somebody to help mold those younger guys. And they have so many that they would be able to part with one of them. But, you know, it's a tough situation. I think what the Suns are going to be looking for is, you know, somebody who can step in and just fill that role. Right now they have Teletovic and John Luer. Neither of them are going to be able to replace anything close to what Markieff could do. So, you know, they need someone serviceable. They need somebody who can go out there and at least get them around 10 points a game, hopefully. And I just don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, that's why they pay Ryan McDonough the big bucks, I guess.
Well, I'm just kind of curious. I'm amazed that you would forget that you guys have Earl Barron. I mean, you got the Barron there, bro. I don't know what you're talking about. Speaking of, you know what? I think we've kind of beat the Markieff drama to the, you know, it's a dead horse that we're whipping here. But it's definitely something to watch, and it's not for the probably not the best reason that everybody, all eyes will be on Phoenix for probably the rest of the summer. You know, it's kind of a dog days right now. But speaking of, like I said, you guys brought in Mirza Teletovic from the Nets. You did sign Tyson Chandler from Dallas. Oh, how is it? I was just thinking this too before I even jump into this. It seems like Markieff needs a really strong culture and you know, somewhere with really good leadership, probably to try to get him under control. I don't know why. I was just thinking Dallas would be a good place, landing spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, I would be all for it. You know, if you're going to ask one of the Suns fans right now, I think they would say any of the 29 teams would be a great landing spot for him.
Oh, so the temperature of the fans, are the fans pretty much fed up with Markieff?
Well, the thing about Phoenix fans is that when they have a player that loves them, they will love that player back. When a player says something against the fans or says that they don't want to be on the team, the fans turn against them quicker than you've ever seen. So right now, Markieff is public enemy number one. Everyone wants him gone.
Yeah, and honestly, I know that you guys have a pretty – well, your GM, I wonder about him for the way he handled draft picks before and some of the moves. But, I mean, like you said, he's not going to give the guy away. So I'm really interested if they're going to just, you know, cut bait right now or if they're going to try to smooth it over with him. But you guys brought in Teletovic. You brought in Tyson Chandler. John Luer. I didn't know. Has John Luer, you guys just signed John Luer, right?
Yeah. We traded for him during the draft. Gave up a second-round pick for him. So we'll see how that goes.
That's actually a sneaky good pickup, man.
We definitely need it.
I like it, man. And then I think you got one of the most underrated picks in the draft, Devin Booker. So let's talk about your offseason a little bit. Can you give me a quick grade? How do you think the front office did?
Just with the draft?
Well, no, the whole offseason so far.
Whole offseason.
Well, we'll leave the Morris drama off of there. But just as far as the acquisition you guys made, you got Tyson, Teletovic, you got Luer and Devin Booker. I think that's a pretty good offseason. Talk to me about it. And then you re-signed your boy Brandon Knight too.
Right, exactly. And I was going to say that was, to me, that was the biggest part of the whole thing, was taking care of that. The thing that I was, you know, I wasn't around Brandon Knight a whole lot because of, you know, him coming in halfway through the season. But from my interactions with Brandon, he's a really great guy, really great player. And I think this year you're going to see a lot more of that leadership from him. Last year, it really wasn't his team yet. This year, now that he's committed, now that the Suns have signed him to a long-term deal, I think you're going to see a lot more influence from Brandon Knight. I think it's going to be a very, very positive thing. Speaking of positive influence, signing a guy like Tyson Chandler, that veteran presence to come in and really help mold a player like Alex Lynn, who just seems to be fledgling right now and looking for someone to help him really refine his game and take it to that next level. And I really think that Tyson Chandler is probably worth that contract alone, just with what he potentially could bring as far as chemistry, veteran leadership, and almost like a coaching, for Alex Len.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's weird somehow. I mean, I knew they signed Tyson, and the Marcus stuff was going on, so I kind of didn't pay attention. Marcus went to San Antonio, and I was just kind of, I was just looking through rosters, afterwards, and just messing around with the internet, and I just kind of looked at them, Tyson Chandler, and I looked at the rest of your roster, and I saw, okay, I love Eric Bledsoe's game. And I saw Knight, and PJ Tucker's still there. And then you got Archie Goodwin, and you guys just drafted Devin Booker, and you got TJ Warren, and I realized, Alex Len is there. You guys are too deep at every position with quality, and then, you have depth, Sonny Weems, Ronnie Price, these guys aren't great, but I mean, you have depth. You got guys who are off the bench. You can come in waves of people. What are you guys gonna do about the wings? That's what's kind of worrying me. So we talked a little bit about the guys you brought in. Let's talk about the guys who are already there. Archie Goodwin and TJ Warren. I watched the little summer league, and those guys, they look good. They're athletic. They still can't shoot a lick, but I mean, they're almost unstoppable going to the hole. PJ Tucker's there, and now you get Devin Booker. So you guys are getting a little crowded there on the wings. What's the outlook? What do you see happening there?
Well, you're exactly right. We definitely have a bit of an overcrowding at the wing position. And the Suns, there's no secret to what they want, right? They want shooting from their wings. TJ Warren is a bit of an exception because his game is just so unique. That he has that old school game. He's a true, throwback type player who doesn't rely on a 3-point shot. He cuts through the lane. He looks for, drives into the basket. He has a great floater, a good mid-range shot, just a very unique scorer. So I think the Suns are willing to, go with that just because he's such a unique player. But Archie Goodwin has had a real struggle breaking the rotation, and he's another unique player. He's ultra aggressive. He's very athletic. He loves to draw contact, but he just has not been able to shoot. And the Suns rely on a system where they want penetration from the point guard and then kick it out to the wing who can shoot an open three. Archie has not been able to do that, and that's really made him struggle. So I think the addition of Devin Booker, who can do that, really means that Archie might be on the way out.
Oh, breaking news. So you really think they might look them up? No, that's because it's funny because when I was watching Summer League, I flashed back, and Archie Goodwin and TJ Warren made me think of the old Cedric Ceballos, Richard Dumas days, having that – having the duo of wings who can come in and slash and score, and they're not even second or third option, but they come in and give you quality minutes at the wings. But so you think Archie Goodwin's been made expendable?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see it any other way. They originally drafted Goodwin to be a point guard, which I thought was ludicrous. If you ever watched him at Kentucky, he's not a point guard, never was. He was playing out of positions only out of necessity at Kentucky. He's definitely a scoring, slashing two guard. So the Suns tried to make him into a point guard. That didn't work. They've been trying to work with him to make his shot better. So far, that hasn't worked, although it did look a little bit better at Summer League this year. So if Archie got another opportunity, maybe he could actually crack the rotation this year. But I know I talked to Coach Hornacek before the season last year. Hornacek said that he expected Archie to be a big part of the rotation last year, and that didn't happen. So now that I see that them to bring in Devin Booker, that's that looks like his replacement to me.
Man, that's tough. Is there a team out there you think he would thrive on? Can you think? Because it is hard. I'm with you, man. I know that in the league, these not being able to shoot. On the plus side for him, he can score. Right. So being able to score, but not being able to shoot is really tough to fit in today's NBA, unless you're a guy like Russell Westbrook who can just kind of, break defenses, or, that's pretty much it.
Right. Yeah, I think Archie could succeed on a lot of teams, to tell you the truth. I think he's a really good player. It's a shame that he hasn't been able to you know, be able to be used the way I think he would be most effective on the Suns, because I think he's really has a lot of potential. And when you see what he's able to do in summer league, now, of course, that's against much lesser competition, but you see that raw athleticism, you see that aggression, and the Suns don't have anybody else like that. You know, so that's a unique skill. It's just, how are you going to integrate him into the offense when you're a very point guard dominant, offense that you run? It's very difficult. So he would need a system that would allow him to do what he does best. And right now, Phoenix hasn't been willing to use him in that way.
Can you give me one team? Where do you think he would fit? Just throwing out there.
I hate to say it, but I think he'd almost fit on the Lakers, to tell you the truth. So, sorry, everybody. I do not want to see that happen. Want to see that happen. But he could really help that team, I believe. Well, a lot of people can help that team, so let's be honest. But I think he would have a very – I think he'd be perfect for that team.
Okay,
I hope
everybody.
That happened, by the way.
Everybody that's at Sean Sullivan, NBA, and he said that – he said that the Lakers are a better team than the Suns right now. And
No, never that.
No, let's talk about, go back to Mirza a little bit. I like Mirza. I like his talent, but I didn't watch him too much in with the Nets. What do you think? Is he a good fit? Will he be a rotation guy? Is it just a low risk, high reward signing? What was it?
Well, I think he's all of those things. Everything that you just said, I think he's definitely a good fit. He can be that stretch four. I think he is low risk, high reward. The one concern, of course, was last season having to shut it down because of blood clots in his lungs. So that's a scary situation. And the Suns are kind of hoping that, you know, that he remains healthy this season. And if he does, and if he's able to play, and if he's able to integrate in this offense, I think he could be an absolute steal for the Suns this year.
Man, I'm really intrigued by your squad, man. And I'm one of the few people I keep saying I don't think the Pelicans did enough personnel-wise. And while the Brow is going to make a jump, there are several of the teams that actually – the teams are going to make a jump. And I think that the Pelicans are falling out of the playoffs, and I got Phoenix and Utah making it 7-8 in some order. So I'm really intrigued by what you guys got going on down there. What about you? What do you think? Give me your prognosis for this upcoming season.
Well, here's the thing: the Suns definitely took a step back last year, and you know, this was a very rough season overall. So far, it's been a rough off season. They went big going after LaMarcus Aldridge. They were very close. From what I understand, LaMarcus had his mind made up to go to the Spurs the minute free agency started, and the Suns got him to almost change his mind. So the Suns pitched him great, you know, really made him consider it, and they barely missed. But that barely missing out potentially caused some more issues, because that's what got this whole Morris Twins situation rolling, you know, trading away Marcus to open up that cap room. So, I mean, you know, it just depends on how it all plays out. Right now, I think the Suns still need a power forward. I think they're going to find a way to get one. I just don't know if he will be able to step in and fill, you know, the vacancy left by Keith. However, I think if Bledsoe can stay healthy, and with a full season of Brandon Knight, if he can stay healthy, and with the additions of a guy like, you know, Devin Booker, who can just let it rain from outside, and the growth of TJ Warren, I expect him to get a lot more minutes this season. Potentially, you know, having someone like Tyson Chandler in also to help develop Alex Len more, there's a lot of good things happening for the Suns right now. So I think after taking a step back last season, I think they're going to take a step forward again this season. Now, does that mean playoffs? Maybe, maybe not. You know, they could end up being the ninth seed again, having another, you know, end of the lottery pick. So I hope not. Maybe they can finally crack into the playoffs and, you know, turn this thing around and start building in the positive direction again.
What would be your idea of a successful season this year for the Suns?
Well, an idea of a successful season would be turning the ship around, right? Right now, everything's starting to unfold. It looks like everything's falling apart. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty regarding the front office and the relationship with the players. And I think if the Suns can just go back to normalcy and have, you know, a season without all of this extra drama and just play their game, let their young guys flourish, show some development of the younger players. And I think if they can just once again be competitive, even if they don't make the playoffs, but anything, you know, maybe a 47, 48 win season, I'd be happy with that because that would show that they're back on track.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm expecting from them, especially because let's talk about this is my guy, Eric Bledsoe. You know, you brought him up. We touched on him. It was a weird negotiation last year with him and the Suns, and I don't know. I don't. You'll know way better than me. It's just after the way things went last year. Is he happy there? What do you think? Is he all in?
I think he's all in now. Yeah, I think he really is. I think last year, people didn't know what to expect. Eric Bledsoe is not the most approachable from the perspective of when you talk to him. He's first of all, let me just make that clear real quick. He never denies an interview. I've been to many games after the games in the locker room. He has always volunteered to talk to the media. It's just that when he gives you answers, he won't give you more than you ask for. He's very well coached in what he says to the media, and I think he uses that, like for his free agency. He wasn't on Twitter saying where he wanted to go and what he wanted to do. He wasn't making any noise. He just let his agent handle it and let the Suns handle it. And all of that silence in between left to a lot of speculation and people saying, oh, the relationship is contentious. Bledsoe's not happy. But then when he actually signed the deal, he said, this is what I wanted to do all along. I just wanted to get a fair price. This is where I wanted to be. I want to be in Phoenix. I want to play for the Suns, and I'm happy to be here. And he's given me absolutely no reason to question that. Ever since signing that contract, he's been a very positive player and a positive influence, and he's always taken whatever leadership role he can. I think that's limited because of his personality, but he's always tried his hardest to be the best player on and off the court that he can be.
And that was my next question because, you know, the guy they call Mini LeBron, he does a little bit of everything on the court. I think he's going to be at least a borderline all-star this year. What do you see his ceiling as? Is he that player to lead you guys, to lead the Suns deep, or do you guys need another, I guess, more alpha kind of personality? What is your take on him as a player on the court?
So you have just asked the million-dollar question. Right? I mean, this is what everybody wants to know. How good can Bledsoe be? You've seen games where, for instance, last year, I forget what date it was, when they played Oklahoma City Thunder on ESPN, and Bledsoe outplayed Westbrook, just had a phenomenal game, took over, he was unstoppable, showed, you know, just great defense, great offense, aggression, everything. And then you have games where he almost disappears, where he looks a little bit checked out. You don't know if that's a conditioning thing or if there's something else going on. But I think Bledsoe had to have been affected by all of the turmoil last year. I mean, how could you not be? You know, you start the season with Dragic and Isaiah Thomas, and at the end of the season, you're the only one left. And they bring in another guy, Brandon Knight, and you have to start this chemistry and this relationship all over again. So I think he got hurt, and then Bledsoe had to carry the load himself. So I think just having a full off season and starting over again, and as long as everything kind of finally starts to settle down and Bledsoe can start to build, I think he's going to continue to improve. I really do think he can be a borderline all-star or even an all-star. He has that potential for sure.
He's so good, man. He's in the mold of player that I like. Him, Russ, Victor Oladipo. Not great shooters, but you're not going to keep them from scoring. Sometimes they might, you know, they might have a 6-for-19 night, but when they do, they also have 8 assists, 12 rebounds, 4 steals. just one of those guys can just wreck a team's defense and can be a one-man offense on the right night. I really love his game. I asked a question, I think, the other day on Twitter, and I got kind of roasted for it because I was like, you know, who would you rather build your team around, John Wall or Eric Bledsoe? And John Wall is a fantastic point guard. You give him shooters, right. you give him guys who can finish, and don't expect him to carry your offense as far as the scorer. You're good to go. But if you're going to build a team around without that, I think I'll go with Eric Bledsoe. I think he can just, like you said, that Sun game, the OKC game. I remember that. He when he gets rolling, he's heading downhill, coming down the lane, and he's finishing those ridiculous flip shots, you know, and falling down, he's almost unstoppable. So, yeah. I think it's a lot of people think, man. So forecast, what do you think you guys finish up this year? Oh, no, you just told me. So you think right outside the playoffs, maybe ninth, maybe sneak in eighth?
Yeah, I would say real close to eighth, if not eighth seed. I think if I was going to make a prediction, I would say we'll finish with 47 wins this season, and I think that would be great.
So let's go a little bit more general NBA. Who you got out of West right now making it? Who do you think?
It's hard to – the Warriors still, you know, the Warriors are just so talented. So I'm going to pick them until they prove me wrong.
So that's your number one. How about – round? Give me the rest of your top four.
For the West?
For the West.
Okay, so definitely the Warriors. You know, I hate to keep picking the Spurs, but the Spurs are just, you know, until they're another one of those teams that they just won't get old. They won't go away. They won't die. I don't know how they do it. I really don't know the secret. But if they can continue playing at a high level, you know, I guess until they prove me wrong, I'll pick them as number two. I think OKC will be right back. You know, I see them at number three. You know, one of the teams that I think is going to surprise some people this season is Utah. They're another team that kind of had a season like the Suns did last year. And I think it's just the beginning for them. I don't know if I'd go as high to picking this as the fourth best in the West, but I don't think they'll be far off from that. So, I think Utah is definitely a team to watch.
Okay. Not bad. And, yes, it's so weird. We can talk all the numbers we want, but like chemistry does matter and culture does matter. And the Spurs have established such a strong, trusted culture that yeah. I'm like you. And I think the minute LaMarcus came into free agency, I had him pegged for the Spurs. And I know that, you know, they said he was thinking about the Suns, which was impressive. Like you said, that if they made him waver, that's pretty impressive. But I wonder how much did it factor in that the Suns did have so much turmoil last year. And, you know, I wonder how much does that get back to a player like LaMarcus? What do you think?
Oh, it had to have, right? I mean, you know, you, if you're LaMarcus Aldridge, you have a team like the Spurs, just the consummate professionals, right? The team that with all the championships and a great head coach and stability, and then you have a team like the Suns who have been up and down. Historically, they're one of the best teams in the NBA. Actually, I think they are the best team in the NBA that's never won a championship. They've always been competitive. They've always been to the playoffs. They've just never had a championship. So then maybe they're cursed. Who knows? But when you're LaMarcus Aldridge and you're looking at a team like the Spurs and you're weighing that against a team like the Suns, I'm surprised that the Suns were able to make as big of a push as they did and almost get it.
I think you guys had a really strong offseason, though, even without LaMarcus. So who do you think had a better offseason than you guys? And of course, let's take LaMarcus and the Suns, the Spurs out of it. The Spurs, to me, are the ultimate outlier. When people bring up teams and stuff, hey, but the Spurs do it, and the Spurs are their own. They're in their own stratosphere. Who else do you think probably had made us the best come up this offseason?
You know, I was going to say the Spurs, obviously. So
of course.
If I can't go with them, you know, I like some of the things that the Rockets did. I can tell you who didn't have a good offseason. I'm sure you can already guess that one. I don't know what Sacramento's doing. But, you know, they're about the polar opposite of the Spurs. You know, they just, I just don't understand it. You know, from any angle you look at it, it's just terrible. So
Do you remember how much excitement there was even from the casual fan when the Moose were gone? I remember that feeling. Like, it almost was like ding dong, the witch is dead. Right? I remember. It was like, you know, people were kind of high fiving. Yeah, they're out of here. And, you know, bless Vivek. I don't really know him or anything about him, but just from the things I've read and what's happened now, you know, is the new regime much better than the old regime? And I'm pretty sure there are going to be some Kings fans that will chime in and say, hell yes, it's still better. But that's scary, man. Boogie's in what, 2 years, I think? Boogie's going to be out, up for free agency again, so that's scary.
Right.
So your wish list, power forward. You're looking for a power forward. Give me somebody like in the mold of who would be your ideal?
Well, you know, you just talked about them. If I could have my dream scenario would be for the Suns to somehow get involved in this Sacramento Kings fire sale and somehow convince them to send DeMarcus Cousins to Phoenix. I think, could you just imagine DeMarcus Cousins playing on a team like the Suns with Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight? First of all, the Kentucky connection. Second of all, his versatility to play the four, the five. Just a tremendous inside-out game, you know, post-defense, you know, post-offense. Just an incredible player all around. And if he was on a team like the Suns, sky's the limit.
The only problem with that is all of somebody like Cousins or a big-name player that you have to give up the farm for him. And so it'd almost be like two steps forward, a step and a half back, you know. But, I would love to see Cousins with a guard like Bledsoe and then Brandon Knight. And, you know, have Tyson holding his back. That would just be, you'd make some noise in the West, and that's crazy because the West is that tough. I can't even say you guys would dominate, you know.
Oh, absolutely, but you did say dream scenario. So, yeah, I'm giving you best-case scenario.
how about a more realistic piece, a more realistic fit? You can send out Archie Goodwin and Markieff Morris, and you're going to get back about equal in value power forward.
Okay, so we're talking realistic now. So kind of realistic. I think, you know, one of the guys that I would like to somehow get, and there's no way to do it in just a direct trade with them, we would have to get a third team involved to make the numbers work. But if the Suns could somehow make a trade with Houston for Terrence Jones, I know some people are kind of, yeah, exactly. Some people, though, don't like that just because, you know, he had an inconsistent year, had some injuries. But I think Terrence Jones is one of those players that could really, really flourish on a team like the Suns. And especially if you're getting rid of a player like Markieff, could step in immediately into that role and really help the Suns just pick right up where they left off.
That's not bad at all because, I mean, he's almost, you know, he's not quite the offensive player Markieff is, but I mean that's you're not losing much at all if you get Terrence Jones. That's not bad at all, man. That's actually a good one.
Yeah.
Hey, do you mind? You know what? Here, I'm not gonna keep you forever, but do you mind? I asked Twitter. I said, hey, I'm gonna have the big man Sean Tobin on tonight. You have any Phoenix Suns questions? You want to answer a couple questions on there?
Yeah, as many as you want.
Oh, okay, cool. Let's just hop into it real quick. To my man at @LL_budget. We actually answered your question already. He said, what's the plan for Archie Goodwin this year? And, Sean actually feels that Archie might be on the way out. So thanks for the question. my man, at Jacob Padilla, he wants to know, what is your favorite thing about Markieff Morris?
my favorite thing about Markieff Morris is that I probably won't have to cover him post games anymore.
Oh, was he rough? Was he a rough one? A little rough interview sometimes?
No, you know what? To be fair with Markieff, he was always professional for the most part. I can't say always. He did have that one time where he refused to take questions from the media. I think he gets a bad rap. You know, he's not a bad guy at all. He mumbles a lot, and it's hard to understand what he's saying because he talks so low, and he's another one of those guys that will just give you the bare minimum response. But, You know, I never had a problem with him. So, yeah, I'm just kind of taking a shot at him for no reason. So, my fault.
Hey, Marquise, I know you're not listening to my podcast, but, hey, Sean says you're sorry. So, my man at @hoop_nerd, he wants to know, does Bledsoe Knight work any better than Bledsoe Dragic? And number two, do you think Marquise plays a game in Phoenix this season? So, I'll let you handle that.
Yeah, those are good questions. And I actually like Bledsoe Knight. I like the promise of Bledsoe Knight. I'll put it that way. Bledsoe and Dragic already had success. They had great success 2013-14. So now it's going to be a time to see if they can replicate that success. My personal opinion, I think that they can. And I think there's a potential where they can even surpass it this season. So I'm very hopeful that that's going to be a great duo for the Suns. Second question, do I think Marquise play the game in Phoenix? Absolutely not. They don't want him to bring down the locker room. They don't want him to mess with the chemistry any more than it already has been. So I think they're going to look to move him as soon as possible.
Yeah, it seems, and that's, you don't want to, you know, if you don't want to let it fester, the longer it goes on, the worse it probably gets. So yeah. My man at Cam Forever Young. Will the addition of Tyson Chandler hurt Alex Len's playing time and development? I'll go first on that one because I think you touched on it a bit earlier. I think it's only going to help him because we know Tyson's not going to play. Tyson's not playing 82 games. He's going to have his nicks and bangs. Tyson's not going to play 38 minutes. He's just one of those guys. You know, he's going to get foul trouble or he's just not going to have it. So I think it's and practicing and just being alongside a professional like Tyson Chandler is only going to make Alex Len better. You can take over from there.
No, I absolutely agree with everything you just said. So, yeah, nothing else I can say except for amen. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, man, that's a huge pickup for you guys, man. Just the level of professionalism and the toughness of your team went up about 30% right there. My man, at S Chasen KU, is it true that every basket a twin score counts for double?
But it didn't seem to work out that way on the scoreboard last year, so I'm going to say no. But thanks, Scott.
So opening night, what do you think your lineup's going to be?
Say that one more time, sorry.
Opening night, what's the Suns' lineup going to be?
Opening night, so you want starters? Let's see. As it is right now, so I can't make my dream scenario trade of Boogie coming to the Suns happen. Let's just say I think it'll be Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight. I think we'll have T.J. Warren at the three. I'm going to say Teletovic at the four for now, and Tyson Chandler at the five.
Oh, you don't think P.J. is going to start?
No, I don't. I think this year P.J. is a good role player. He brings toughness, but they have to get Warren on the court, and I think Warren is going to earn that spot before the first season game.
Wow. That just kind of blew my mind. I just had PJ penciled in, you know, like that. Yeah, hey, almost like a Tabo kind of starter, right? Even if he didn't play the biggest minutes, he kind of set the tone defensively, but man, maybe. Wow.
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible that PJ could continue starting and maybe Hornacek makes PJ earn it in games. But I think they really want to get TJ on the floor more. He's shown that when he's on the court, he does special things. PJ's a good role player, but I think he's destined for a backup role, and I think TJ is going to overtake him. If not the first game of the season, I think shortly thereafter.
Wow, breaking news. Wow. I didn't know you're 7-foot-tall, bro. That Twitter was telling me that just now.
That's right.
Did you play ball in school at all?
I played everything. You know, I actually did Junior Olympics for shot put and discus. You know, I played football, and you know, that's kind of what stopped me from playing basketball. Is I got a couple knee injuries, lower back injuries, and you got banged up a little bit. I should have never played football. That was the problem. So, but anyway, now I get to you know, help educate college students instead of you know, shooting on the court. So, yeah, who needs millions, right?
Yeah, dude, money's over it. So yeah, what position are you playing football, man? As a 7-footer,
I played a little bit of everything. I played some offensive line. I played defensive end. Yeah, just basically anything they wanted me to do.
Wow. That must have been wild out there, man. Too Tall Jones. Last question from, I think this must be a friend of yours, @Chris_Koffel. Who do you think should play the next Freddy Krueger? I have no idea why he's asking that.
I have no idea either, but I think, you know what? Robert Englund was the original Freddy Krueger. He's only like 68 years old. They have makeup and special effects now. Go ahead and throw him back in there.
Are they making another one?
I think so, yeah. So,
wow.
See what they do.
Is it going to be a remake? Like, are they doing a reboot, or is it going to be an original story? Do you know anything about that?
I have no idea. I've heard that they're making a new one. I don't know anything about it. I'm sure Chris Koffel will know, though, so maybe we can follow up with him.
Yeah, maybe I'll talk to Chris on that. Maybe I'll just block him for asking that question. What's the last movie you saw?
Last movie I saw that I liked?
Just in general.
In general.
How about both? Have you been to theater lately? Did you go see Fantastic Four yet?
I haven't seen Fantastic Four. I'm not going to see that movie. It's you know, it has terrible reviews. Just not going to do it. I do want to take my kids to see Ant-Man. Last movie that I really liked was Ex Machina. You know, if anyone likes sci-fi movies, that's a tremendous movie. I'd recommend that. Great, great movie.
That's the one where I guess they made like a robot, AI. They're trying to do AI and
yep.
See if it can love. Is that what they're doing?
That's the one.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see it. It looked kind of creepy, but was it kind of a horror kind of sci-fi?
It is. It definitely. It's not, I wouldn't say horror. It's just one of those uncomfortable, you know, too close to reality type of things that really makes you think. So yeah, I definitely recommend it.
I'm going to keep this show pretty clean, but did he bang the robot? He banged the robot. Okay. Hey, Coach Nick, sorry if that was too far, but no, I just had to, because the robot looked like she was doing her squats and she had a nice little shape on her, so I was like, he's going to bang that robot.
Well, there you go.
So, brightsideofthesun, .com is where you guys can find Sean Sullivan. Where can they find you on Twitter, man?
You can find me at Sean Sullivan NBA on Twitter. And like you said, brightsideofthesun.com. Not just myself on there, but a lot of tremendous writers also follow. Dave King, he's a great resource, really connected to the inside. So, yeah, follow us all, and we'll keep you updated on everything that happens in the off season and in the regular season as well.
That's what's up, man. I really appreciate you coming on. But thank you for being so patient again. Like I said, I felt terrible. I felt like, man, he's going to think I'm full of crap.
Anytime at all. I'm honored to be on, so... Yeah, let's do this again sometime. This is fun.
Definitely. I want to have you on during the season, like, you know, while we're rolling. And, you know, we're going to have storylines to talk about. So I definitely love to have you on, man. Thank you very much for giving me so much of your time. And, yeah, you guys follow him, man. He's it's @SeanSullivanNBA. Am I right?
That's it.
@SeanSullivanNBA, man. Hey, man, you have a great night. And we'll catch up with you soon.
You too. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Hi, man. All right, man, that was pretty, ended up being a lot better show. I came into it, I wasn't feeling the greatest, had a long day at work, and I kind of hopped on, you know, I got done working and stuff just in time to get up with him and get the show running, so I think he probably carried it, and I hope I didn't ruin it for anybody. But yeah, that was a pretty decent Suns preview. It's one of the most intriguing teams. I think the Suns, one of the most high-variance teams, I guess, because we know they have the talent to go far and to do a lot this year, or relatively a lot. I don't think they're going to be contenders at all. I still think that even now with this brouhaha with Markieff, they can still challenge that 7-8 spot. All about chemistry. It's amazing how much chemistry matters in basketball. I think we sometimes overrate it and underrate it. I do think it had a lot to do with the downfall of the early 2000 Lakers. I know there were injuries and, you know, money things, other things came up too, but you know, when teams like to play together, when guys actually enjoy coming to work and playing with each other, it makes a difference. It makes a difference on the court, and it makes a difference off the court because guys will want to stay around and play. So the Suns are going to be an interesting team to watch. I want Eric Bledsoe to be a star. I remember, I think my man DJ Foster wrote a piece on him when he was still with the Clippers, and just talking about how he was just a one-man gang defensively. And now he has a bigger offensive load. We probably won't see too much of that, but the potential is there. The man is He's a freak athlete. He's, you know, we don't put him up there with Russ and Derrick Rose, you know, prime Derrick Rose, but I mean, I think he athletically is right there. So let's see if he has the mentality to be that alpha dog for that team. It's really intriguing to see. So, yeah, that's it for the show, man. I think I'll have you guys a couple more preview shows. Keep an eye out for them. I appreciate you guys listening and tuning in. And that is it for this episode of the Instant Offense Podcast. Till next week.